For the next hour, you'll be leaving the Show Me state and entering the Show Me the Money state. So stop what you're doing, grab a pen, and get ready to learn. Jake Floyd of Floyd Financial Group will be your guide for straight talk and honest answers about living the life you deserve in retirement. So prepare to be empowered. Now, here are your Show Me the Money hosts, Jake Floyd and Jeff Shade.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Show Me the Money with Randy and Jake Floyd, the radio show that gives you the straight talk and honest answers you need to help you reach your wealth management and retirement goals through smart investing and careful planning. My name is Jeff Shade, and I'm just here to ask the questions for you. But of course, you know the words of wisdom. They come from Jake Floyd of Floyd Financial Group. Hey, Jake, how you doing this fine Saturday morning, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for asking.
You're certainly welcome. I hope everybody else is doing well today, too. April is upon us here. Before you know it, May is going to be here, and then summer's going to be here. Then it's going to be fall. Boy, time seems to fly, Jake, when you're having fun. Do you find that these days it seems like the calendar just flies by?
Yeah, I agree with that, Jeff. You know, and people have been telling me my whole life that the older you get, the faster it goes.
And that's true.
I agree.
Yeah, and I had a conversation with my I think my daughter was 6 years old, and you know, I tried to explain to her that a year of my life was like 1/40th, a year of her life was like 1/6th, and she couldn't remember the first four of them. So yeah, things tend to fly by faster when you are older, but nevertheless, we're glad that everybody decided to join us here for Show Me the Money. We've got a lot to talk about on today's show, Jake. And it seems like that for a record 446 days, I'm reading this recession indicator pointing to a downturn that never arrives. So what is that recession indicator, and do you think that it's ever going to arrive?
Yeah, so basically, Jeff, the inversion of the yield curve is what they're talking about here, where the two-year yield is higher than the 10-year yield. Because usually in a normal environment, right, the longer you tie the money up for, the more interest you should get. But that has been the opposite of that for the last 446 days. And, you know, still is the case at this moment. So we'll see how much longer this can go. But previously, it was 100% indicator that we were going to have a recession, meaning it had never not given us a recession based off of that. Now, technically, we had a little bit of a recession, a technical recession, where we had two negative quarters of GDP. But, you know, I don't think anybody's really feeling like there's a recession. They may feel like everything costs more, but, you know, for the most part, people still have their jobs and they're not having too many layoffs and all that kind of thing just yet. It's an interesting metric because of its very, very high rate of accuracy looking backwards. But this time it does seem to be that maybe we're missing something, or maybe it just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask you, Jake, is do you think that this is a hard and fast rule, or is this a rule that's going to be broken? And as you said, is this going to happen, in your opinion, sometime in the near future?
You know, Jeff, I think a lot of that really revolves around who we get as our next president here. While the stock market and the economy are two different things, when we're talking about recession, we're talking about the economy. I do think it's possible that we could have a recession coming up. However, I do think that it will be short, and I don't think it will be a really big deal. And I think that the market may look past it from an investment standpoint, meaning this is old news at this point. It's 446 day old news, to be exact. So I think most of the market is kind of yawning at this point. You know, we know that this is here. We've known this is here for a long time. And I think the market is going to try to look past it if a few things go well over the next 6 months here.
Well, being that this is an election year too, and of course, this is April, so the election is going to be heating up here pretty soon. Do you think that that is going to have a significant effect on whether or not we have a recession or not?
I really do. Yeah, I think that if we end up with the right person in office there, I don't think we have to have a recession. I think if we keep thinking that we can print our way out of every single problem and just pay everybody to stay at home, that's the kind of thing that recessions are made of. I think that there's a lot of companies out there starting to do some layoffs, but there's still a lot of companies that are not. You know, the tech companies doing layoffs, as we've said on this show in the past, is less concerning to me because they all overhired all through COVID. And so they're just kind of coming back to some sense of normalcy. However, if we start to see manufacturing jobs get cut, that'll be a little bit more concerning.
And when you talked about printing money, I think about Dave Ramsey, a colleague of ours who also has, of course, the radio show about eliminating debt. And I remember something he said once when somebody said, "Hey, Dave, do you think I should take out this loan to pay off this loan?" And he said, "Look, you cannot borrow your way out of debt." I think that really applies to the U.S. government, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that somehow they don't think that 1 + 1 = 2. And yeah, I would agree with that. I think there is a place for refinancing debt at lower interest rates, both on a personal level and a government level. But it is not going to make the debt go away. You have to make payments on it to do that. I think there is a lot of truth to that, Jeff.
Yeah, I think those are words to live by. Talking with Jake Floyd here, Floyd Financial Group, talking about current events. We've talked about this economic indicator that has happened here for 446 days that would indicate a recession. It hasn't happened yet. And I think the consensus is that it depends upon who we get into the presidential office as to whether or not we're going to have a recession. Also was reading, Jake, that interest rates now are tipping back up as far as home mortgages go. What do you make of that and interest rate cuts?
Yeah, so the Fed has not been changing interest rates, but the market's anticipation and the market's pricing in of those cuts, potential cuts in the future, has been fluctuating a lot lately based off of inflation reports, CPI, PPI. A lot of these reports are saying that, you know, inflation's still here. Well, I could have told you that, and so I'm sure most of our listeners could have told you that. So they seem to be very surprised about this. I'm not super surprised about it. The question is, does this change the Fed's mind? Because the Fed has said they're going to cut three times this year. The question is, are they still going to do that? Or is this hotter inflation print enough to keep them from cutting? Because if that's the case, there's already quite a bit of rate cuts priced into this market here. So we may have further downside to go if that happens. Couple that with the whole Israel mess there. It's very difficult to see what's on the other side of the next 2, 3, 4 months, especially because we don't really know who Donald Trump is going to be running against yet. And I know a lot of our listeners already know that. But I think I would expect fireworks somewhere between June and August on the overall election front, both from the Democratic side. Also, you know, Trump at some point is going to lay out his running mate. I think there's going to be some more uncertainty cropping up here. You know, we had the VIX, the Volatility Index, which is just a measurement of how volatile things are, was under 15 for like 4 months, 5 months straight, which is very abnormal. It's now back up in the high teens, low 20s. It's starting to get, you know, a little bit more volatile than it has been for a while because, you know, the last 6 months preceding this last couple of weeks or so, things were very quiet and very good. You know, if you had money in the market, I hope you made money because if you can't make money in the last 6 months, you ain't going to make any money. As things move forward here, things are going to get a little more difficult, and it's important to have a plan in place to deal with whatever volatility may come.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key takeaway to our entire show is to have a plan to account for the things that are unexpected. Jake, you talked a little bit about inflation. I want to talk about shrinkflation, and it came to mind because the other day, you know, in my local supermarket, they have these little cookie type of things, and they put like, I don't know what it is, some kind of whipped cream or something between them, and then they put a cookie on the bottom. They make sort of a sandwich out of them. And I got one the other day, like I need to have that. I really shouldn't be eating these things, but nevertheless, I got one of these things the other day. It was probably half to, I'm going to say, two-thirds of the size of the one that I had before. And I'm noticing, wow, this shrinkflation really is not something that I'm, you know, making up in my mind. It is true.
Yeah, it's everywhere, Jeff. I mean, I think the easiest place to see it is things like that, like you're talking about there, which, by the way, you know, admitting you have a problem is the first step.
Yeah, it's the first step to overcoming them.
So.
I'm not huge, but, you know, I could stand to lay off some of this stuff. I know what you're talking about.
But, you know, some of the other easy places to see it is like bags of chips with all the air in them, or even they haven't even bothered trying to trick you anymore. They just make the bag smaller and charge more for it. It's pretty much everywhere. Yeah, I think even like your detergent for your clothes washer and all that, it's much, much smaller. I bought some the other day that they were like cute little miniature things. And my wife's like, what is this? I was like, hey, it's shrinkflation. You know, I don't make the rules. I just buy the detergent.
And, you know, in California, it's interesting, too, because this $20 minimum wage law, I've been watching this. And a lot of fast food restaurants now are really, really struggling. They're laying off people, and it's driving more people to firms like Chili's and Applebee's and so forth and so on. Do you think that that sort of thing could happen across the country where the minimum wage, I mean, already at McDonald's, you know, these were entry-level jobs, but today, many times, it depends upon where you are in the country, they can pay up to $20 an hour. I think that's really exclusively California, but it's not uncommon to see $16 and $18 an hour.
Well, they have to pay whatever they have to pay to keep people working there, you know, right. And if they have to pay more, then the prices go up. And at some point, people are going to say, you know, I just don't think a quarter pounder meal is worth $20.
Exactly.
There is an upper threshold to that. The question is, where is that upper threshold? I think we're getting close to it.
Oh, yeah.
On a lot of fronts, you know, I think, you know, you go to Dairy Queen and you get a hot dog and some fries and a drink and a little sundae or something, you know, and it's 10 or 12 bucks minimum.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
And you go to all these different places, and I'm not picking on Dairy Queen, it's everywhere. I don't really know what that threshold is, but I feel like we have to be getting close. And
we
I think
got to.
The key to a lot of this is going to be people keeping their jobs. Once people start to lose their jobs, then all that credit's going to dry up. And once the credit starts to dry up, it's kind of a cascading effect. That's why it's so important that we get the right person elected this time around, because if we start laying people off of all their jobs because the environment is such where they can't afford to keep them, then that could be a real problem. If we get a president in that cuts corporate tax rates, that's a huge tailwind for jobs and for workers as well as business owners. And again, I've said many times here, but I'll say it again. I think it's very difficult to overstate the importance of this election.
Right. This is one of the most important elections that I can remember in my lifetime. So certainly hold on to your hats, because we're in for a little bit of a wild ride. I want to wrap up this segment by talking about some temporary supply shocks. I'm still seeing that. Are you seeing that in your supermarket or wherever you go once in a while, that you'll go try to find something and the shelf is completely empty?
Yeah, I don't know about our listeners here, but I was, you know, we were talking before this show, Jeff, and I was saying, you know, I don't remember growing up and having a bunch of empty shelves everywhere I went in the grocery store.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
I grew up in Nixa, you know, and back then, people that have been in this area a while may remember the Smitty's that was in Nixa. I remember mm-hmm. that when that went in.
Yeah.
And then I remember when it went out. But, you know, we went into the Smitty's there, and I just don't remember there just being empty shelf, empty shelf, empty shelf the way it is now.
Right.
And some of the grocery stores still are not that way, but their prices are quite a bit higher. If you go to Walmart,
yeah.
I mean, I can't remember the last time I went to Walmart and actually got everything I wanted to get, because they were out of this or that, or frankly out of everything, depending on when you go. Certain mm-hmm. times of the week, if you go, they're less stocked than other times of the week. Like a Sunday afternoon seems to be a time where they're really low on stuff. So I don't really know what the solution is there, because it seems like we should not be having those troubles 4 years after COVID, but
right.
it seems like we're still having a lot of the same issues, and I don't quite understand why that is. But I don't remember that being the case when I was a kid.
No, likewise, too. I don't remember it at all. But with these supply shortages, my wife will send me to the supermarket to get something for her. At least it's one of the things on the list. And I've already gone to look for it. The shelf was completely empty. And I'll take a picture of the shelf just to show her. They don't have any of this at all. And this is not some exotic thing. It can be like Prego spaghetti sauce, traditional or mm-hmm. something like that. But they'll absolutely not have one jar in the store. You can find all these other exotic things, but they won't just have some of the staples. So anyway, that's what's happening in current events today. We're talking with Jake Floyd of Floyd Financial Group. We're certainly glad you could join us this week for Show Me the Money. Once again, if you'd like to come in and sit down with Jake and just shoot the breeze a little bit about your retirement plan and maybe get a few things off your chest, get Jake's input on things, we're offering a no-cost, no-obligation, and no-judgment Floyd Financial Group Retirement Review. As I said, it doesn't cost you a dime. To get yours, call 417-889-7233. It's 417-889-7233. Very casual conversation between you and Jake to get your questions answered to put you on a path towards a confident retirement. You can call this weekend if you want, 417-889-7233. Leave your name and telephone number. Ashley will call you back during the week and set you up with an appointment to have that friendly conversation. You can also request your complimentary consultation online at floydfinancialgroup.com. Jake, time for a break. When we come back here on Show Me the Money, we're going to continue our conversation about 19 money mistakes that people traditionally may make during the first year of retirement. All that and more when our show continues here on 104.1 FM KSGF, where Springfield comes to talk.
Ready for another helping of some more real money talk? Thought so. Now, here's another serving of Show Me the Money with your hosts, Jake Floyd and Jeff Shade.
Welcome back to Show Me the Money. As promised last week, we said we would finish our 19 mistakes not to make in your first year of retirement, and we're on number 7, spending money on the kids.
That's right, Jake, and we typically sometimes bite off more than we can chew, but we promised that we would finish this, so we're going to be good on our promises. Here, if you've missed that first part, we talked about being conservative with investments, or too conservative with investments, I should say, not creating a retirement plan, also overspending, taking too many risks, getting scammed, and claiming Social Security benefits too soon. So as you said, we're up to not spending too much money on the kids. Now, we're not talking about like your son, Trevor. We're talking about pretty much, I think, the adult children, right?
Yeah. So I think as people live through their lives, some of their adult children, you know, have a little hard time in their 20s or 30s. And a lot of good parents out there are trying to help their kids out. And sometimes that can be quite a bit of money. It starts out at a couple $100 a month. And before you know it, it can be a couple $1,000 a month. And while I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong to help them, you do have to be careful what that does to your overall retirement plan if you're putting money into them instead of money there. 20 or 30% of the people that I talk to say, hey, you know, I had more money, but I had to help my son with this or my daughter with this.
Right.
So I do hear that quite a bit, help them pay for school, that kind of thing, pay off student loans or whatever. So it is important to help your kids. Obviously, I'm not saying you don't want to help your kids. I'm just simply saying right. We need to make sure during the planning process that we're accounting for things like that and really understanding what it's going to cost you to help them in an ongoing way.
Right. And it's just like on the airplane when they say in the case of a loss of pressure, put the mask on yourself before you put the mask on the other people. And I think the same thing does apply here. You want to make sure that you're taken care of before you try to take care of somebody else. So helping the kids with things like, you know, paying for education is one thing. But boy, I tell you, Jake, I see so many circumstances where there are adult children. They may be 30 years of age, 31 years of age, and they're just taking money from the parents because they can. And I think that really does a disservice to them. I didn't come from any money whatsoever, and there were some very, very tough times in my life in which I had, you know, several jobs and, you know, odd jobs and things. But man, I tell you what, I worked and I got through it, and it really taught me something. But today, I think that if you're supporting kids completely, they're able to support themselves, but still you're paying their rent, you may be paying their mortgage, you're doing a disservice not only to you, but to those children too, because what's going to happen when you're gone and they can't support themselves? So I'm going to step down off of my soapbox now, Jake, because I know you and I are the same and Randy's the same too.
So I also think that there's situations where one of these kids, these adult children, may be living at home. They have a full-time job, but they're not paying rent. They're not helping out with food and things like that.
Right.
They're going to see Taylor Swift every other weekend, you know, and spending money on all kinds of things that are not adult types of things, so that maybe they make $20,000 or $30,000 a year, but they spend it all on stuff they want to spend it on while you're funding their food and maybe their school and their clothes and all that kind of thing. So it can really be sometimes good medicine to make them kind of pull their own weight. And again, I'm not saying there's not a situation where it makes sense to help them out. I'm just saying sometimes you gotta kick them out of the nest.
Yeah, absolutely. So they can learn to fly on their own. But I think just, you know, these days there's some neglect in just simple budgeting and also priorities too. Their wants versus needs. And I'm not going to get into that one too, because that's an entirely different show. So spending money on the kids, it's okay. I mean, to a certain extent, but don't neglect your own well-being. Next one on the list is going to be neglecting your debts. I don't see how anybody could really do that, but there's some people who just neglect the debts.
Yeah, I probably only have maybe about 5% of my client base that has anything other than a mortgage payment when they're in retirement. It's really not very many, but it does happen. You know, if you're paying 20 and 30% interest on credit cards at Kohl's and other places like that, that's definitely something you want to take care of before you get to retirement. So it's a little harder to tap the piggy bank, known as the house, when interest rates are high. 7.5% is a lot of interest. A lot of people are like, well, I remember back in the 80s when interest rates were 12%. And I agree with that, but it wasn't preceded by a time where interest rates were zero for 15 years, you know, so it's a little bit different situation this time. And because of that, there's people that have 2.5% mortgages. Refinancing at 7.5% to get more money out of your house is hard.
No.
And so it's a little harder to pay down debt than it was the previous 15, 20 years before the last two. And so I do think we'll probably get another opportunity to have lower interest rates, in my opinion. And this is not, you know, this is speculation at this point, but I think we're in the last hoorah, if you will, of interest rates before they go way down. We're kind of having this last moment of fluctuation. We'll see what happens in the future, but consolidating and really getting that stuff paid off before you get to retirement, if you do have it into retirement, getting that, rid of that stuff as quickly as possible will help ensure your success and also make it so that you can have more income in the future, you know, because if you're not paying on all those payments, all that interest, that's room that you have in the future to combat inflation.
Right. And again, I think it's learning to separate wants from needs. So in the first year of retirement, if you do have things such as credit card debt, unsecured loans like that, you should make a concentrated effort to pay those things down. You'll be much better off for that. So don't neglect your debts and try to pay those things off with the exception of a mortgage. Next one is letting your insurance lapse. If you're struggling to pay your bills, letting your insurance lapse or expire without paying the premium, that can be tempting, but not the best idea.
Yeah, that's a big yikes for me. You know, home and auto is one thing. The health one is the one that really scares me.
Because
there's a lot of people that, you know, you retire at 63 and a half and you're like, well, I'll just go without insurance till 65. I'll be fine. Well, most people that say that don't know how much things can cost in the hospital these days. You know, if you have even a relatively muted battle with cancer or heart attack or something, it can be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just a momentary lapse can be devastating. So yeah, I totally agree, Jeff.
Yeah, so up there with food and shelter is going to be health insurance. Don't let that lapse. Next one on the list here is going to be going on a grand vacation in your first year of retirement. I got a couple of opinions on that, so I'll let you start first.
Sure. I would say that this is not a hard and fast no. You can definitely go on a grand vacation. You just need to be aware of what it's going to cost you in those first years of retirement to go spend $20,000, $30,000. It really is going to vary widely from person to person. If you've got $1 million, $1.5 million saved, it's probably not going to matter that much, right? But if you've got $200,000 or $300,000 saved, going and spending $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 will be devastating to the rest of your retirement. And that's okay if you're okay with that. It may be that important to you. One thing you'll learn about me here is that I will never tell people no and what they can and cannot do with their money. There's a lot of advisors that try to do that, and they say, hey, no, you can't do that. It is your money, 100%. But
sure,
it's my job to try to keep you within the guardrails so that you don't do things to yourself that you will regret later. And so going on a grand vacation, first year retirement, really is probably more a factor of how much you have saved, if you have excess saved or not, rather than just a simple yes or no.
Right, and we talked about planning. If you plan for that grand vacation in the first year of retirement and you plan for it for 5 years and you put away the money for that, that is one thing, but just splurging and taking 10% of the total worth that you have and going on a vacation is yet another. So if you want to go on that grand vacation, that's great, but plan for it in advance. Talking with Jake Floyd here, Floyd Financial Group. We're continuing our conversation about money mistakes that people make in the first year of retirement. Next one on the list is not sticking to a budget. What do you think about budget versus sort of like bumpers or guardrails?
Budgeting is something that a lot of people from 45 to 60 years old don't do a lot of because they're kind of in their peak earning years. They make more than they spend, and so they just don't worry too much about it. When you get to retirement, it's very important that you understand what you're spending because you got to make that amount that you saved last. And so that's probably one of the more difficult things and more time-consuming things that we do is trying to help people understand their budget or you know how much money they're spending. A good way to look at this, if you're not sure where to start, is take your take-home paycheck for you and your spouse if you're married, and then add back in the cost of health insurance if you're going to retire, right? Either COBRA or Medicare or health insurance exchange, whatever it may be. So take your take-home paycheck, add back in health insurance. And that's a good rule of thumb, a good starting point to figure out what a budget is, because you probably don't need 100% of the gross income that you have now simply because you're not going to be funding 401ks, you're not going to be funding Social Security tax, FICA, all those things. That's a good starting place, but that is certainly not the be-all, end-all way to factor it, but that is a place to look. You can also look at your credit card statement if you're one of those people that puts, you know, everything on a credit card and pays it off once a month. You can look at that and total all that up. and kind of see what that looks like. But understanding what you're spending is very important.
Yeah, and it's just a very simple practice of making two columns, income and outgo. You know, on the left, you've got the money coming in. On the out, you've got things like your housing, your food, your insurance costs, if you've got a car payment, cable bill, cell phone, that sort of thing. And then just making sure that your income exceeds your outgo, because if it doesn't, then your upkeep becomes your downfall. So making a budget, very, very important, and sticking to it. Next one is not researching what you're entitled to. You know, when you become sort of this golden age, or they call them senior citizens today. I don't know if I like that or not. If you're 62, you're considered a senior citizen. But there are a lot of benefits with age.
Well, Jack Nicholson doesn't give a darn what you think you're entitled to. I'm just kidding. that may not hit home there, but I imagine I have a few people laughing.
Yeah, no.
When it comes to not researching what you're entitled to, yeah, there are definitely things that people don't know exist when it comes to Social Security. If you've been married previously, previous spouse, you can potentially file off of. If you're widowed, there's potential benefits there. When we get to even, you know, long-term care situations, if your spouse was a veteran, you could be entitled, they could be entitled to help paying for the cost of long-term care. And that's just a handful of things off the top of my head. But yeah, that's one of the places where we can bring some value, because we get to see this all the time. There's some places where we say, hey, are you getting this? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you could be getting this benefit. And they're like, really? Okay. You know, and just because you'll only retire once, and we retire hundreds and hundreds of people, it's very easy for us to see it, where it's a little harder for you guys to see it.
Yeah, and there are a lot of benefits, as I said, that you're entitled to when you become a quote-unquote senior citizen. And just an example, you know, you roll through McDonald's. As I said, I don't need to do that. But when I do, I get a senior Diet Coke because, you know, it's like a dollar versus $1.79. There are senior discounts for hotels and flights and just all sorts of things. So in doubt, ask for that, because you're entitled to it if you're age 62 or older. Next one on the list here is going to be paying more taxes than needed in the first year of retirement. I think this is a pretty big one, Jake.
Absolutely. And I think this one plays into a lot of the other ones, like going on a grand vacation. That was something we didn't talk about there, which is if you take your IRA money to pay for that $30,000 or $50,000 crazy vacation with your kids and their kids, it's going to cost you $50,000 to $70,000 because you got to pay the taxes, right?
Right.
And so same for buying a new car, all those types of things. And so understanding where the tax brackets are, understanding the consequences of spending certain types of money versus others, understanding what feels like a tax, which is it can also make your Medicare Part B or your health insurance premium go up, depending on what you do when it comes to, you know, spending retirement money or paying taxes. So I think all those things are things that are second nature for us to think about, but the average person hasn't really had to think about much in the past. Taxes are just their taxes because they make a certain amount of money. They don't really have a lot of say over it. And so when you get into retirement, we need to plan for taxes, because any dollar that we don't spend in taxes is money you can spend later.
We're talking about retirement mistakes that people often make in the first year of retirement with Jake Floyd at Floyd Financial Group. And Jake, I'm sure that people listening to the program may have some questions to ask of you. So if that is you, good news, because we're opening up the phone lines right now for you to give us a call at 417-889-7233 and request your no-cost, no-obligation, no-judgment retirement review with Randy and Jake at Floyd Financial Group. That's right, it's not going to cost you a dime, but it could be the most important call that you'll make all year. Once again, that telephone number, 417-889-7233. Pick up the phone this weekend and make that call. Leave your name, your telephone number. Ashley will call you back during the week. She'll set you up with a brief conversation with Randy and Jake there at Floyd Financial Group. And again, we're not going to try to sell you anything whatsoever. So be sure to take advantage of this opportunity. 417-889-7233 is the number to call. You can also request your plan online at floydfinancialgroup.com. It's floydfinancialgroup.com. Hey, Jake, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation about common retirement mistakes that people make in the first year of retirement when our show continues here on 104.1 KSGF, where Springfield comes to talk.
We're back with your financial catch of the day, and it's a big one.
Here's more Show Me the Money Radio with your hosts, Jake Floyd and Jeff Shane.
Welcome back to Show Me the Money. I'm Jake Floyd, and in this segment, we're going to finish up our discussion on 19 mistakes not to make in your first year of retirement.
That's right, Jake, and we have talked about around 14 of those. And of course, if you've missed any part of our program or you've missed those 14 mistakes, we're also a podcast. Go to wherever you get your podcast. Search for Show Me the Money with Randy and Jake Floyd. You'll find this show and a whole bunch of our other shows, so you can enjoy our little talks and stay on top of your journey towards retirement. Okay, Jake, our next one on the list here is being cash poor but rich in assets. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, so sometimes people don't have a lot of income, or they don't have a lot of, you know, liquid money, but they might have a big house, or they may even have some rental properties or things like that. As my dad likes to say, that cash flow is king, especially once you get to retirement. There's a lot of truth to that because it's more about your income versus outgo than it is about your total income when you get to retirement. Anything you can do to reduce outgo is actually better than having more income, because it also produces less taxation on Social Security, less taxation on income in general. So definitely don't want to be strapped when you get to retirement. You know, sometimes we see this where somebody has a century farm or a farm that's been in the family for a long time. So they have a $2 or $3 million farm out there, but they have trouble making the bills each month. Obviously, I admire what they're trying to do with the farm, but at the same time, you got to live and be able to be, you know, liquid when you get into retirement.
That's right. And as you said, some people have a big house that there's a lot of equity in. I mean, you could do a reverse mortgage on that if you absolutely need it. Now, we're only talking about if you're strapped for cash. I think if you're okay for cash and you've got this asset, you want to pass it along to the kids. That is one thing. But if you're strapped for cash, certainly a house is one place to look. But I mean, look around your home. You may have an extra car or two or three sitting around that you could divest yourself of that you never drive. There are also a lot of things in your house that you might be able to turn into cash too. So don't be cash poor, but rich in assets. Next one on the list here, Jake, is going to be not discussing your options with professionals.
Yeah, one of the reasons we offer the free consultation is because we just want to do whatever we can to encourage people to talk to a professional, even if it's not us. You know, you may listen to this show and you may really just get a kick out of how crazy we are. And even if you don't want to come in and see us, that's fine. But go see somebody, you know, talk to somebody who gets to help people retire all the time, because they can really save you from some mistakes, save you a lot of heartburn. There's a lot of basic things that are what we consider basic that a lot of people just don't know. And we can help you avoid those things. And you know, you come in, you tell us what you want to do, and I'll say, hey, here's an issue I see with that, here's how we can get around that. And simply having that discussion can really save you a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and this is a big one, I think, too. I don't know about other financial advisors in this town, Jake, but we offer a no cost and no obligation, no judgment retirement review. So why wouldn't you want to take advantage of this opportunity? You can sit down with Randy and Jake and talk about your individual journey, get your questions answered. Once again, that telephone number is 417-889-7233. If you want to take advantage of that opportunity, 417-889-7233. Next one on the list here, Jake, is going to be not taking living expenses seriously.
Yeah, so I think that living expenses are important to understand. This kind of goes back to the budgeting thing. Just really understanding what needs to go out each month and where that money is going to come from, and making sure that we're not spending too much money out of our retirement accounts. That's kind of the essence of retirement planning, is really understanding what you need, how to get it, and how to not run out. That's kind of the three basic parts of this. So if you don't know what you're spending, you're going to have a hard time doing that. That kind of goes back to the budgeting one, and this one kind of go hand in hand. But the first step to retiring is understanding how much you're going to need.
And I think that's the first conversation that you have in these meetings, right, Jake, is determining what someone's lifestyle is going to be like and how much money it costs to live that lifestyle.
Exactly. You know, we'll do a little discovery. We discover, you know, who these people are and what's important to you, how old you are, when you're thinking you're going to retire, what kind of assets you have. Talk about your current income. And then from there, we can kind of start to engineer the plan. But until we know all those things, we can't really do a lot, because those are the building blocks that we need for the plan.
And finding out what you want to do in retirement, that is important right up front. As we've said before, some people just like to fish off the bank. Other people like to have a grand bass boat, while other people like to go on European vacations. It just all depends. Now, let's say that, Jake, you sat down with your father and he wasn't in this industry, and you sat down with him and you said, well, Dad, what do you think you like to do in retirement? And he said, well, you know, I like to ride bicycles. And you're thinking to yourself, well, my gosh, how much does a Schwinn bicycle cost? That can't be too much. But Randy's bicycles, they're not cheap, are they?
All bikes are not equal. You can buy a, you know, a $79 Huffy at Walmart, or you can buy a $15,000 e-mountain bike or anything in between. And so understanding priorities for you in retirement is definitely one of the things we talk quite a bit about in here. We want to make sure that we're understanding and that you're understanding what it's going to cost to do the things that you want to do in retirement. There's a lot to consider there, but us just talking about things and understanding what's important to you is the first step.
Yeah, and Randy is my hero because even though he is semi-retired, he's on the show with us regularly. He still does come into the office, I mean, every morning up at 4:30 in the morning, him and your mom, and they're out there on their bicycles, they're swimming, they're running, they're doing all sorts of things too. So my hat's off to them. Next one is not planning for medical costs. Boy, I think of all the things we've talked about, Jake, this is probably the biggest one.
The most difficult thing about accounting for medical costs in retirement is everybody's going to be so much different, right? There's people that are going to go full Ronald Reagan on us and go, you know, 12 years with Alzheimer's in the nursing home and spend $1 million, $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that'll never need any of that. It's such a hard thing to account for, but you do need to have a plan for if the worst happens there and you need care, where is that money going to come from? There are ways to structure assets that where we can leverage some of that money to get more bang out of our buck for medical expense and really not leave too much on the table from an earnings potential standpoint. So there's some asset-based long-term care stuff that we can talk about if you come in for your consultation. But this is definitely a target that's hard to hit. This is the big this is the big thing that can wipe out any plan that you have put in place, no matter how good a plan it is. You know, you get a couple of people in the nursing home at $9,000 a month, it all goes to pot pretty quick. Trying to make sure that we at least have a plan for if that happens, what assets we're going to use in what order and how we're going to mitigate taxes, what kind of planning we need to do. Are there any other ways that we can get help paying for this care, you know, veterans benefits, potentially Medicaid, depending on the situation? How are we going to pay for this? It's definitely something we need to give some thought to.
Yeah, and that goes to Randy's four ways to pay for long-term care. We've talked about that on the show before. But I'm reading a stat, Jake, that says that the average retired couple 65 or older in their lifetimes will spend around $315,000 on healthcare expenses. Now, I know a lot of people are thinking, well, I've got Medicare. So how does Medicare play into this? I mean, it's not going to cover everything, is it?
Yeah, so most of that $315,000 is going to be long-term care costs because Medicare does not pay for long-term care.
No.
Anything that is not acute in nature and beyond a certain time frame, Medicare does not cover. And so most of that cost is going to be actual long-term care costs where you're not necessarily getting better. We're just providing care in an ongoing manner. The part where you're getting better will not be nearly that big as far as the amount, simply because if you have a Medicare Part A, Medicare Part B, and a supplement and or an Advantage plan and a drug card, you know, you're not going to have a ton of out-of-pocket costs. It's really those things where we're doing rehab on things or we're doing just ongoing care for cognitive or just unable to transfer, things like that. That's where a lot of that cost comes in.
Yeah, and as Randy says, and as you said before, Medicare pays for things that you're going to get better from, not necessarily a long-term care. Now, I've heard of people having healthcare expenses. Let's say, you know, they've got some form of cancer or something, and these healthcare costs could be in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've never known the answer to this, so I'm going to present it to you. Does Medicare have an upper limit on what they will pay?
So in general, Jeff, there's no upper limit on what Medicare will pay for. There are some limitations on what it will pay for. So, you know, vision and dental and things like that, or there's some limitations on that. But as far as how many heart attacks it'll pay for or how many, you know, that type of thing, there is no upper limit to that. But there are a few limitations on the types of things it'll pay for.
Right. And Medicare deductibles are really quite good. I remember paying for my wife's medical insurance. It was around $1,100 a month on the open market. And even with that, there were $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000 deductibles. And with Medicare, I think it's, you know, a couple of $100, something like that. So all in all, Medicare is a very good insurance plan once you qualify for it at age 65. But if you're not 65 yet, Jake, I think that paying for medical expenses probably is going to be a little bit of a challenge, or is it not?
Yeah, so I think most people experience a net decrease when they get to 65 and get on Medicare as far as total out-of-pocket healthcare costs because of what you're talking about, Jeff. The premium, you know, if you have a really good supplement and you got $174 a month for Medicare Part B and you got a drug card in there, you know, you might be out $450 a month on the high side. But after that, you're going to pay for almost nothing that's medically necessary. You know, it's going to cover all, the vast majority of everything. For most people, they're used to a plan, like you said, that has a $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 deductible, and then maybe has co-insurance up to the next $5,000 or $10,000. So for the most part, people experience, you know, a net decrease in cost at 65.
Jake, let's say that someone decides to retire at 64 or 64 and a half. Can they get COBRA, use COBRA coverage to bridge that gap till they get to Medicare?
Yeah, if you can afford it. That's the big question. But yes, there's nothing stopping you from using COBRA, which is simply the extension of benefits from your employer plan, up to 18 months if you do quit your job or if you're fired for that matter. You get it for up to 18 months. But again, COBRA can be eye-poppingly expensive. It's not uncommon for COBRA to be $1,000, $1,500 a month. So just make sure you understand what that's going to cost you before you elect to go that route.
We're talking about the 19 money mistakes not to make in your first year of retirement with Jake Floyd of Floyd Financial Group. And we've talked about being too conservative with investments, not creating a retirement plan, overspending, taking too many risks, getting scammed, claiming Social Security benefits too soon, spending too much money on adult children, neglecting your debts, letting your insurance lapse, going on a grand vacation in the first year of retirement, unless you've budgeted and planned for that, also buying a brand new car at the beginning of retirement. We know how expensive those can be. Not sticking to a budget, not researching what you're entitled to in terms of senior discounts, paying more taxes than needed, being cash poor but rich in assets, not discussing your options with professionals, and not planning for medical costs. And we talked about this earlier, not taking advantage of senior discounts. Again, if you have missed this part of the program, you'd like to hear it again, go to wherever you get your podcast, search for Show Me the Money with Randy and Jake. You'll find this show and all of our past shows. Once again, if you'd like to sit down with Jake and Randy at Floyd Financial Group and discuss your individual situation, no cost, no obligation for that whatsoever. Very casual conversation. It is a no-tie zone here. 417-889-7233 is the number to call. Leave your name, your telephone number this weekend. Ashley will call you back and set you up with an appointment to talk with Randy and or Jake at Floyd Financial Group. Once again, 417-889-7233. You can also request your plan online at floydfinancialgroup.com. Time for a break, Jake, when we come back. That'll be our final portion of this week's show, and we're going to be talking about the first 5 years of retirement, money moves you absolutely must make, when our show continues here on 104.1 FM KSGF, where Springfield comes to talk.
People of the Ozarks, step away from the fishing pole and prepare to be shown the money, because we're back with more straight talk and honest answers with Jake Floyd and Jeff Shade.
Welcome back to Show Me the Money. I'm Jake Floyd, and this last segment we're going to be talking about in the first 5 years of retirement, moves that you need to make to your retirement strategy.
And Jake, you know, you can plan for retirement your whole life, but when you get there, you're bound to encounter a few surprises you just couldn't see coming. So let's leave it like that, and we'll start off with number one, is to update your budget. Now, your budget, is it going to be dramatically different, do you think, when you get into retirement versus when you were working?
I think for a lot of people in this area, they're not just dying to go to Europe or Asia or somewhere like that. I talk to way more people that want to see this country than other countries. However, there are exceptions to that. There's nothing wrong with going to Europe and that kind of thing. I'm just simply saying the vast majority of people in this area are not going to have meaningfully more spending in retirement than they do while they're working. There is some extra time to fill, but depending on what you want to do in retirement is a big part of that. And as we talked about in previous segments, you know, the budget is a very important part. I won't beat that to death because we just talked about it. You know, having a budget, understanding your spending is one of the most important parts of your retirement plan.
Yeah, and as you said, and I would echo your sentiments too. I mean, people say, well, the beaches in Mexico are beautiful. Well, we got beautiful beaches in this part of the country, and I don't have to be worried about being kidnapped when I'm in Florida or Texas or someplace like that. There are so many beautiful things in this part of the country. I don't want to get on a soapbox here, but you think about the unexplored wilds of places like Alaska. We got beautiful beaches in Hawaii. We've got everything in between. So, yeah, not updating your budget and accounting for things is going to be a big mistake, and I think that you'll find when you do your budget, that you may not be spending money on expenses that you would incur when you're going to work, such as commuting and so forth, but you'll make up for that for the leisure activities that you're doing. So update your budget. That is one thing that you want to do in the first year of retirement. Next one is refining your withdrawal strategy, another very important thing to do.
Yeah, so a lot of people adhere to the 4% rule, which means of the amount of money that we have, let's say you have $1 million saved up, that would be $40,000 a year withdrawn out of your portfolio. So that we would add that to Social Security, any pension income that you have, any part-time income if you're part-time working in retirement. And so really understanding the budget and then refining that withdrawal strategy around that budget is important. We can go a little bit more strong than the 4% rule if we have certain protections in place. That's something we'll talk about at length when you come in for your consultation. But having that withdrawal strategy changed, frankly, even just set up once you retire, you got to live. So you got to have money to do that.
We talked about the pros and cons of the 4% withdrawal strategy, Jake, on the program before. Do you think that the 4% withdrawal strategy does not apply as much in a hyperinflation environment like we're in right now?
Yeah, so technically speaking, we're probably not in hyperinflation, but yes, there's a lot of inflation going on. People need to account for the fact that it's going to cost more to live later than it does now. And that's part of what the 4% rule accomplishes, is we're taking out less than we really could at the moment to make room for later having to take more out as we get older for inflation, but also just different types of costs and that kind of thing. So leaving some room for error, I guess, if you will, is kind of what the 4% rule is about. However, if we have certain protections in place, we can push that rule to 5%, maybe even 6%, depending on your age and outlook and other factors. So there's plenty to talk about there, but it's going to be very specific to each person.
Money moves to make in your first year of retirement. That's the topic here with Jake Floyd of Floyd Financial Group. Next one is going to be revisiting your investment strategy and your holdings, Jake.
Yeah, so this is a big one. This kind of goes hand in hand with the withdrawal strategy, because when you're setting up your investment strategy and what you're actually invested in, you know, the primary function for that for people in retirement is to pay them income. You know, gold does not pay income. Not to, you know, beat the horse to death there, but it's very difficult to use gold as a retirement asset. There's nothing wrong with gold, but if you need to take income, the commissions and the trade cost associated with gold is very difficult. So there's certain types of investments that are better for taking income each month out of there and just making your life easy. If you have an account set up, a brokerage account, you know, you can have stuff direct deposited right into your account. So it's just like you're getting a paycheck. So it makes it very simple, very easy, and you don't have to think about it every month, versus if you have a big pile of gold sitting over there, you got to go sell just enough to make ends meet every month and make sure you account for all the commission and everything else. So that's kind of just understanding how each part of your portfolio is going to operate and pay you income is a big part of that.
Right, and I think reconsidering your asset allocation in the first year is very, very important too. I think most baby boomers have a lot of stock in their portfolio when they first get into retirement, which is much more risky than some of the safer investments. Would you say that you should gradually divest yourself of these stocks and get into more safe things? What would determine when the time is right to go to much safer investments, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think, Jeff, that we can say blanketly how that works. That's really going to vary a lot from person to person, but the average person needs to add some safety as they get retired, because they can't afford to have the market pitch them a 2008 scenario while they're withdrawing 5 or 6%, because they'll never get back to even. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, we would have, you know, a little bit less risk as we get into retirement as things move forward. However, there's people that have saved more than enough money and they can afford the swings, and you know, they want to make sure they maximize their returns, and that's okay too. But it really is going to be a person-to-person basis, and we need to understand how much you have saved versus how much you need. There's risk capacity and then there's risk tolerance, and those are kind of two different things. How much risk can you afford to take and how much risk do you want to take? Both of those are factors as we're looking at what we're holding.
And in the first year of retirement, and again, I'm going to mention this, we talked about it before, but in the first 5 years of retirement, I think it's very, very important to review your health insurance situation to make sure that you've got the right plan. What do you think about that one, Jake? I mean, what can we add to that that we didn't talk about earlier?
You know, I think we pretty well covered it, but I would just say, just make sure that you don't have a lapse in coverage. You know, make sure that when you retire, you're either on Medicare or you have arrangements made to get on the exchange or Cobra so that you don't end up up the creek without a paddle, so right. to speak. That can just be such a devastating thing that can happen. The amount of cost that can be associated with not having health insurance and being responsible for those bills is just astronomical. So, you know, make sure you understand what it's going to cost you in retirement. There's professionals out there that you can talk to that'll help you understand. You know, they'll take your list of medications and say, hey, you know, if you do this, here's how much it'll cost. If you do this, here's how much it'll cost. And that's definitely something worth talking about before you pull the trigger on retirement.
And in the first 5 years of retirement, it's also, I think, very important to update your legacy planning and sit down with a pro to talk about that because things change.
Yeah, we never know what a day will bring. So you need to always be ready for each day to... You may not be have another chance to update these things, right? So making sure that things go the way you want them to go when you are gone, who gets your stuff and how and when is a big part of that. So having an attorney that can develop an estate plan for you is definitely something you want to do, maybe even before your first 5 years of retirement, but definitely within that window.
Yeah, and I went to the dermatologist the other day just to have a mole looked at, and they're asking me whether or not I have a living will. And I'm going, what? Maybe this is not the right place. But
it's
I think that's...
A mole, man.
It's like, what, am I going to die from this? But nevertheless, you know, when we talk about these things, estate planning, that's one thing, but also things like medical power of attorney or just power of attorney in general or a POD pay on death at the bank. I mean, these are things that you all need to review during your first 5 years of retirement. So make sure that you've got those. Next one is going to be brush up on your financial fundamentals. What do we mean by fundamentals here, do you think?
Making sure that you have an emergency fund, make sure you got debt paid off, make sure you, again, have your budget set up. We talked about that already, but make sure that you're taking enough risk, make sure you're not taking too much risk, make sure you're understanding how much money you're making, is it replacing what you're withdrawing? That's kind of what I think we're talking about, fundamentals, and just making sure that you have at least, you know, a loose grasp on some of those things is what you should have in your emergency fund and what your expenses are. You know, you don't need to be an expert, but it is good to have some general knowledge around there. Get rid of high interest credit cards, get rid of your student loans and that kind of thing. The mortgage, I'm a little bit less concerned about, especially if you have a mortgage that's at, you know, 2.5% or something like that interest. That's less of a problem. Some people, the purists out there, would say you have to have your mortgage paid off. I'm not sure I agree with that. I would say, though, if you have financed it in the last couple of years and you're at 6 or 7%, that's very different than if you're at 2.5%. But I think that's what we're talking about when we mean fundamentals.
Yeah, and debt is a four-letter word. So remember that. Get out of debt, 3 to 6 months living expenses, and certainly in an emergency fund. But that question about the mortgage, Jake, that is one that we get a great deal here. And that is, let's say, you know, I've got $100,000 left on my mortgage, but I've got, you know, $300,000 over here in cash. Should I pay that off? And Randy has said before, your house appreciates whether you own it or not. So what do you think about that? I mean, if you've got $300,000 to your name and a third of that is, should you deplete that by a third to pay off your mortgage? What do you think?
Yeah, so generally speaking, I agree with Randy on that. Again, it becomes more of a cash flow situation. So let's say you owe $300, you got $300 sitting to the side. It really would depend on your payment and your interest rate, whether or not that would be appropriate to do. Most likely, the answer is probably no, especially if you don't have a lot more liquid money than that, because we don't want to deplete all your liquid money. However, in a situation where you were paying a higher interest rate, or let's say that, you know, that mortgage started at $1 million and you're down toward the end, that payment is, you know, $3,000 a month. Well, $300,000, you know, we can generate maybe $1,500 a month, you know, $1,500 a month. So the positive cash flow value might make it possible for you to retire by getting rid of that $3,000 a month bill as opposed to keeping it. So there's a few situations where that could make sense, but by and large, it's probably not going to make sense, especially if it's retirement money, meaning it's not just cash in the bank. It's an IRA or 401k, because now you have to pay the taxes on that too. I've seen people do that. It's not a good thing to have to pay, you know, $150,000 in taxes to pay off your, you know, so you need $450,000 to pay off your $300,000 mortgage at 2%. That is definitely not going to be the right thing to do there. But there are some situations where it's worth considering, especially if you're down toward the end of your payment schedule. If you had a 30-year mortgage and now you got 5 years left, you know, chances are your payment is going to be pretty big relative to how much it costs to pay the mortgage off. If that's the case, there's some situations where it can make sense. But by and large, you know, paying off your mortgage with a big pile of cash is probably not the right thing to do, especially if you have a low interest rate.
And I can understand those people who say, well, I want to have a paid off house because I want a situation where nobody can take it away from me. Well, you're right. Nobody can take it away from you because you don't pay the mortgage if you don't have one. But if you don't pay the property taxes, the upkeep and that sort of thing, it can be taken away from you. So, you know, it's one of those six of one, half a dozen of another things. It all is just a personal preference. What's going to make you sleep better at night? We're talking with Jake Floyd of Floyd Financial Group. We've talked about some money moves to make here in the first 5 years of retirement. And once again, if you've got questions about anything that we have talked about on our show today, or maybe you've got a comment about our show, we would love to hear from you. You can get those questions and comments to us two ways, one of which is to call 417-889-7233, 417-889-7233. Also use that number to request your no-cost, no-obligation, no-judgment retirement review. You can also contact us by going to the contact page at floydfinancialgroup.com. It's floydfinancialgroup.com. Hey, Jake, we're out of time for this week. I want to thank you for your time, but most importantly, I want to thank our listeners here, our fine listeners, in the last bastion of sanity, Springfield, Missouri, for joining us. For Jake Floyd, I'm Jeff Shade. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Show Me the Money right here on 104.1 FM KSGF, where Springfield comes to talk.
The information provided in the preceding program is for educational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice for any individual or entity. All information contained herein believed to be from reliable sources, however, we make no representations as to its completeness or accuracy. The opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not constitute financial, legal, or tax advice. Please consult your financial professional before executing any financial strategy. Financial planning offered through Floyd Financial Group, LLC, an investment advisor registered in the state of Missouri.